What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. I am your host, John. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, talkingintoinfinity.com, and the CMSnetwork.com. You can find us at those four locations every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you are watching on YouTube, please remember to click that like and subscribe button so that you get notified every time that we go live. If you would like to catch video replays of the show, check out Heavy Metal Television or just check out our YouTube channel. And if you would like to download audio versions of the podcast, just Google Talking Into Infinity, and we're everywhere you can possibly think of to find audio podcasts. Without further ado, let me bring on my co-host, Brian. What's going on, man? Good to see you.
What's going on, John? It's Saturday at 1 p.m. I don't have any idea what I'm doing on the air. You just said, hey, we're doing a show, so I decided, well, I guess I'll come on, take a break from my pool, which you pried me away from. I'm going right back to you. What are we doing here on Saturday at 1 p.m.?
Yeah, I figured we'd bring some friends on and just kind of bullshit about music a little bit. So, I don't know. Let's bring them on here. We for those of you who've watched the show before, we do have our good friend, Mr. Paul Logue, returning to the show. How's it going, Paul? Good to see you.
Very well. I don't have a pool, but I've got lots of rain in Scotland.
We're all getting wet somehow, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
And of course, let's bring on Chance and James LaBrie. What is going on, guys? Good to see you.
Good to see you. We're doing great. I think right off the top, though, guys, we got to clear something. You prefaced this whole segment with my cameo video about you guys, and I think I was in dire need of a hairdresser at that point. Oh my God, I look like I don't know, Gandalf. I don't know, man.
That was crazy. I actually thought that was really cool of them to get Alex Skolnick to do the intro.
Oh, you're good. Nice. Oh my God.
We had the over and under set it like 30 seconds for how long James commented on his cameo intro, and you definitely got the under on that, James. So
oh my God.
That's good thing you're crazy. In Scotland, Paul. Good thing you're in Scotland, my friend.
That's the beginning of the insults.
So yeah. Right off the rip, obviously, we are here to discuss, James, your new record, A Beautiful Shade of Grey, which came out last month, May 20th. And I got to say, man, right off the bat, Brian and I are big fans. Obviously, you know, we're big fans of Dream Theater as well. And, you know, we've loved your previous solo stuff. And we did have Paul on. And he was really, you know, promoting the record and saying, you guys are going to love it. You guys are going to love it. And I got to tell you, he was not kidding. This is definitely something unique for you. The songwriting is phenomenal. So, Paul, I mean, to you as a songwriter, it's just a bang up job. It's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, James, you know, what was it about Paul's songwriting that, you know, intrigued you to want to reach out to work with him?
I'm sure that most people have already heard this in previous interviews that I've done, and Paul and Chance. But I had done a cameo on one of their albums back in 2011. Paul, was that album or 2010?
Yep.
11. Anyways, it was called No Holy Man, and they had released an animated version of that song in video. And I just remember hearing that song and going, wow, because I hadn't been enlightened to this band Eden's Curse, and I was like, oh, very melodic rock band. And so I talked to Paul a little further, and I said, who's responsible for a lot of the writing? And he said, well, I am, you know. And I was like, okay, at some point I would like to sit down with you, and when we have the time, when that window of opportunity avails itself, let's write an album. And it was 10 years later, you know. It had to be something momentous like a pandemic that brought us together to write an album. But thank God, because I think that kept our sanity and kept us focused on something that was, you know, both something that kept us together and that we were both deeply involved in and passionate about. And so that's how it came together. I love Paul's writing style. I told him at the time that it reminded me of the classic rock era, as well as staying contemporary, which was very important. And hence bringing in my son here, Chance, which kept Paul and I very much focused on keeping it contemporary and cool, you know. So it was a collection of things and various things that I was attracted to. Paul and his beautiful face, of course, And, you know, anyways, and that's how it came together. Yeah, because of that, his quality. And he's the kind of writer that he's very focused. He's very global. He thinks about things, and it wouldn't matter if I threw him a melody or the odd little riff. He came back with something absolutely incredible. And then when he was throwing me all of his various ideas, I was just like, holy shit. And right away, it clicked. And right away, I could, you know, dive deep into it. Yeah.
Hey, James, you brought up the fact that Chance is playing drums on this. And that, from what I understand, that was Paul's kind of original idea to you. And you brought up an interesting point about kind of trying to keep some modern elements to it. Chance, what is something like this? How do you approach something like this in terms of, okay, I'm going to be playing on my dad's solo album. How much input do you have and how much interplay is there? Did you do a lot of stuff writing with your dad on this in terms of parts and how you wanted to approach this?
Well, my dad was speaking about how him and Paul collaborated on a track years ago. And it's funny because I remember when my dad did that collaboration and I checked out Eden's Curse and I knew of Paul and I was like, these guys are sick. I never thought I'd be in a band with Paul Logue and my dad for that matter. But yeah, when I was asked to be a part of this band, I was a little worried because I didn't want to join a prog band and come in as my dad's son drumming after he's worked with all of these world-class prog drummers. But when I found out it was a different route and it was an acoustic album mainly, I was like, yeah, I'm down for this. I can do this justice. And my participation on the album was, you know, Paul would send me parts that he had worked on, and then I would just get on the kit and start working parts out and helping with arrangements and helping with vocals and stuff like that, recording my dad's vocals. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, Paul, you know, speaking of Chance, and obviously, you know, Christian Polkinen, and, you know, he's on this as well. Where did Christian fall in this? And you know, Chance, you just talked about your contributions to the record. Did those guys influence what you were bringing to the table, or did you just kind of like, here's my ideas, play around it? Or did you find your style and what you were presenting changing based on their input?
I think it was really, we had written all of the songs at that point. And I think James and I, you know, we both, I think the phrase we were using at the time, it was like round a campfire, strumming the acoustic guitar. And I think it was when we were working on Sunset Ruin, it's such an emotional quality to it. I knew where James was going to head lyrically. And we both kind of felt naturally at the same time, came to the conclusion that you know, adding some strings in a level. And then we both kind of were thinking the same thing at the same time, saying, hey, what about someone to do the leads? What about naturally a drummer or percussion? So I think the songs were written as the answer to that. And, you know, when I'm writing, it's just with acoustic guitar, it's just with a demo voice that James has done. So there's a blank canvas for Christian to come in and really, truly be himself. And I think this is what's made this record work so well. For example, when I'm giving Chance the song, I had no drums programmed or anything like that. It was go and do what you want to do naturally. James is a huge advocate of that. Marco, give us the solo exactly as you would hear it. And you're getting 100% of that person into the project. And I think and James, correct me if I'm wrong, there was very little times we would ask for recuts, if any. And that got everybody giving their best performance, their heart and soul. And I think that made it such a unique kind of presentation at the end of the day.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we are here to go track by track with you guys. So let's dig into this. We've already got a lot of comments in here. Ray Saucy says, I'm a little late, but love the album, guys. I have hundreds of plays of each song at this point. So he is a big fan.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah. Chris Moran, he says, my favorite song is Supernova Girl and Wildflower. Great singing on those, and I'm looking forward to DT16 sometime next year.
Okay.
So,
right on. Awesome. Well, let's get right into it. And the way we do this is we just kind of give, this will be the first time that we actually have the songwriters and the performers to hear our comments. So if you want to tell us we're idiots, these are just our thoughts on them. And I promise you they're all positive and that's not kiss ass. But Devil and Drag, I mean, I love the way this you get a little synth swell. I think I hear a Fender Rhodes giving me that dark bluesy, like steam rising off the downtown city street, you know. It kicks into this killer groove, and then there's some of those little soaring 70 synths in there. And like you said, the keyboards to me and the strings, those really make this album. I mean, those are what pull these into big giant songs, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think this is a great tone setter for the record, Brian. I mean, for me, you know, the words that come to mind when I listen to the record on repeat is lush and impactful. It's, you know, either, you know, the aggression of the rocking songs, you know, or the emotion from the slower songs, and everything, you know, is just. It's everything's present, and the mix is beautiful because, you know, Paul, you told us that there's what, 36 tracks of guitar on this thing, but, and there's so much going on, but it doesn't sound busy. It doesn't sound cluttered. It's just, like I say, it's lush, it's beautiful. And, you know, the chorus is layered and stuff like that. And it just sets the tone for exactly what you're going to get later in the record. So tell us a little bit about Devil and Drag, guys.
Well, Paul, why don't you comment on Chris? Because definitely, you know, you suggested bringing him in, and he was absolutely integral as to the sonics of the album. There's no doubt about it. Paul, you take it away.
Sure, and I think that song was probably, if my memory serves me correct, the second song Christian worked on. James and I were having a little to and fro with each other on the main riff, which he loved, but it's a single note riff, so when you're playing it on an acoustic guitar, I hear in my head when I play that riff, I hear it fully produced. That's the way that I write songs. I can imagine what the actual finished version is going to be, multi-layered. And in order for me to sell this idea to James, I said to Christian, James knows nothing about this. Give me some, you know, Keith Emerson, give me some John Lord in there. And he gave me back that kind of Hammond, and you're spot on, Brian, it was Rhodes within it to really match the riff. And when I sent it to James, just with the, I think Christian just recorded the whole intro piece, James was like, holy crap. You know, it just lifted the song, you know, to a different level. And I think that was definitely a catalyst for saying, you know, we need to have this on the entire album. This is so great. And Christian grew up listening to a lot of really vintage players. You know, Keith Emerson's probably his number one. And his sound choices and styles were just perfect, really perfect. And he's got a lot of contemporary. I think Christian's just over 30 years old. So kind of like Chance, he's coming from a kind of more modern and a proggy type approach as well, which was great for us. Everything just gelled together and lifted the song into a new kind of area. And we even got my buddy Dennis Ward, who's produced Eden's Curses albums. He put together a kind of test mix for us when we'd all the parts recorded, because believe it or not, James and I were still saying to each other, are we doing the right thing here? Is this going to resonate with people? Is it cool? And when Dennis's mix came back, we were like, oh my god, this is,
yeah, there was confirmation.
Let's go, let's push ahead, and let's do the rest of the songs like this.
So Chance, for you, you know, you had mentioned, you know, earlier in the show that, you know, you didn't want to come in and do this like prog drumming and stuff, but, you know, with falsett and everything, like, you are a metal drummer, you know, you're progressive and stuff. Talk a little bit about, you know, your contributions to this, because, you know, this is, you know, Paul told us that your drumming is very musical, and when you listen to the record, you can definitely hear that. So talk about, you know, expanding your style and what people hear from you on this record, because you have some really, really kick-ass parts on this, and it provides a beautiful, you know, anchor to these things.
Yeah, honestly, when I'm writing my drums, I just do what feels natural to me. If there's ever a part in the drumming that sounds forced or, you know, sidetracks people from the whole song, it's like what just happened there with the drums, then it's no good. To me, the drums should just support the songs, especially these kind of songs, and not turn any heads and pull them away from the whole song and the whole arrangement. So I really just hopped on the kit and worked out parts. Like, a lot of them came naturally to me, and just supported the music, you know, and accented the right accents, and went more full on when I had to and laid back when I had to. So, yeah, just, it was all natural, just flowed out of me for sure. There was no, like, process that I took every time with each song, like it, they just all just came to me.
I think awesome. that's what was important, is that like Chance was on the same page as Paul and I, you know, because Paul and I had had discussions before bringing Chance in. And, you know, one of the things that we said to one another, Paul and I, is like, okay, like this isn't a showcase for any one person. This is a collaboration, and we need everyone to be integral. And that's why I think Paul and I were just, when we had that initial conversation, let's just let these guys be who they are. If we want to tweak something, big deal. But at the same time, the only way we're going to get the most out of these people, these musicians, and they're all great musicians, is if we just let them come back with what they feel naturally. And to me, and Paul and I agreed, it's like everything that we felt, everything that we came up with on this album was natural. And the whole working together, it didn't feel forced. It was seamless. It was effortless. That's the place you want to be when you're creating an album, and that everyone else feels that as well. And I think that's what really made this album kind of, you know, it hits everyone. They're kind of like, wait a minute, like this isn't what I was expecting, but I can fall deep into these songs, each and every song. And I think it's because of that, the way that we went about creating this album. It has a big, big place and statement on this album. That's why it is what it is.
Yeah, and even from my side as well, to show you about Chance, when I say musical, Chance was recommending certain things for me to do on the guitar and the bass to make the song even better. And that is the sign to me, of a really consummate musician. That's not just a guy that's going to sit there with two sticks and
thought about
every single part. To the point I said, hey, I'm actually going to stop my guitar recordings here. So I was in the process of doing the final guitars. As I mentioned, there's 36 acoustic guitars on Devil and Drag. So I didn't want to do 36 tracks for Chance to say, can you add a new bit? So we recognized it was a good time to say, okay, you do your drums, come back to me, I'll cut my new guitars to you, because there would be things he would lay down that I thought, oh my God, that's so good. And I would follow it and further accent it as well. So, yeah, we had such a really good open relationship. I have to say something that's just dawned on me for the first time ever. This was probably the least stressful album I've ever made. There was no bickering, fighting. There was, as you get with musicians, fighting over parts. It was so relaxed. Maybe because we didn't have a label at the time, James, we kind of kept that away until we were done. But it was just... it gave you that freedom to sit back and really do what you wanted and what made you happy as a songwriter, first of all, and then having everyone around you say, yeah, this is great. Why don't we try this? You know, Chance, another sign of a really good musician, but also a person who thinks of others around him, was instead of saying, yeah, I've been in situations where other musicians in a band that I'm working with say, yeah, that's not very good. That's such a detrimental statement. It extracts the joy out of the 5 hours of creating a song. Chance would program something on a bass to say, if you did this here, that would be really cool. And I'm thinking, that's so cool, but also very, very thoughtful of him to think of that and translate his idea. So it was an awesome working relationship, to the point I said to James, it would be so unfair of us if we didn't give Chance a co-credit as production, because he's been so involved in this record. The Holy Trinity.
No, yeah. No, it was. And he was involved in the arrangements, like from start to finish, you know. And it was funny because, well, you can talk about it, Chance, but literally coming in and saying to Paul and I, okay, you guys need to trim the fat here.
Yeah.
What's going on? You know, and Paul and I go, well, okay. So explain. And then once he explained, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, it does make sense what he's suggesting. And there was that throughout the album. But like you just said, Paul, there was never any tension, which when you are in a creative environment, that kind of does seep in where, okay, how am I going to get around this? Because I'm not really digging it, but I don't want to insult or offend. But we didn't have that. It was just like, hey, man, I was just thinking, that why don't we do this?
Yeah, and I think, like, all the ideas that came out of whoever it was, like, we all just instantly felt that. Like, we vibed with it, and we knew. Like you said, Paul, like, you know how you can, like, hear the finished version in your head?
Yeah.
Yeah. Every idea that we had, we all heard that finished idea in our head.
Yeah.
So before we move on to Supernova Girl, I mean, you brought up something interesting there. I did want to ask, you know, Paul and Chance, you know, Chance, you know, James is your dad, and you've seen him work with Dream Theater. You've been in the studio with him. And Paul, you are friends with James, but neither of you ever really crossed that line from, you know, family and friend to actual co-creators. And, you know, that can be rough. So talk about that. Obviously, you guys got along great, but talk a little bit about that. Was there an adjustment, or was it really just as natural as could be?
For me, James is just my friend. So I didn't, you know, for me, it's like my buddy down the road, us writing songs together. He's over in Canada. And I think we've gone beyond the fact, you know, that he's the lead singer of one of my favorite bands. We've known each other for that long. We've met each other countless times that I'm relaxed enough to be in his company. I think the only thing would be when I'm writing and I'm creating my parts and recording my final parts, the one thing I was conscious of, it would probably be the biggest microscope that I'd ever been under. So maybe previously I would have, yeah, that'll do. I had none of that whatsoever. I made sure that my parts were all absolutely cock on, so that when I presented it in the best light, because I'm representing James as well, and James is obviously at a high level, I wanted to lift my kind of output to the best possible level that I could. So that was the only thing. But I think it was just writing songs with your friend, and I think that's why it was so successful.
Yeah, well, we've both talked about how, you know, it felt natural and everything, and it was a great time, but we both talked about how it was a little strange to be working with your family, and like, our vocal booth's right back there, behind that vocal blanket there, and he'd like pop his head out, and he'd be like, this is so weird, man. His son's recording me right now, and still, and for me too, because like you said, I've been in the studio with him before, and I would see the engineers recording his vocals and talking back and forth and, you know, doing their thing and getting a whole song done in one day. And I'm like, this is awesome. This is cool. And I never thought I would be, you know, the engineer recording him. And it is a lot of fun. And it's cool. Like, I've recorded other people too. And with family, it's really easy to be upfront and both say what you're actually thinking. So that was really beneficial too. To it.
Yeah, well, Chance made that real clear first day. He was actually sitting here. I'm walking through the door there, and he goes, okay, Dad, you're going to leave James LeBrie right there on the other side of the door? I'm like, I always do. He goes, okay, all right, Dad. Okay. And it was really funny. I said, that's how we're starting this, is it? Okay, cool. But yeah, nice. But I got it right away. It's just kind of like, look, there's no egos. We're coming into this, and we're just going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to get the best out of each other. And that's what it was from the start until the finish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So was there ever any times when you did a vocal take, James, and you're all super excited, and Chance was like, yeah, Dad, let's maybe run that one again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he did. You know, he'd go, you know, Dad, I don't know. I said, what's the matter with that? You know, like to the point where I'm like, no, man, I really like that. I thought that was great. And he's like,
It's all objective though, right? Yeah. So there would still be parts where I'd be like, do it again, but we'd end up going with the one that he first did because it just had this like, you know, it just fit better or whatever. But
I think what was cool was that Chance at times he'd say, hey, Dad, you know, like that vocal you did in Glass Prison, remember that part, that section? That's what I want to hear. Or he'd say, Dad, you know, when you do that raspy thing with your voice and that, can you do that a little bit here or go into your nice falsetto? Like he'd even, I forget what's, oh, I think it was Sunset Rune. And he first started going, hey, Dad, no. So the first time we hit this chorus, you're going to go falsetto behind it. Because I'm used to going, oh, I'm going to give it my voice. I'm going to go loud and I'm going to go high. And
Which works for distorted guitars and Dream Theater, but for this.
Yeah. And it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go with your lead. And then when I heard it back, I was like, it makes perfect sense. And it slowly builds to the point that the background vocals later on are full on, right? Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, good call, Chance. Good call. Yeah.
Very cool, man. I told you. Musical. music.
Nice. Yeah. So moving on to the second track on the record, we've got Supernova Girl. Brian, for me and, you know, for you, James, this is one of two very direct lyrics on the record, I think. You know, this one, it hit me like a brick. And one of the things I've always loved about your lyrics, James, is that, you know, they're very thoughtful, they're very poetic, but with very simple language. They're easy to understand, but they're not, you know, but this one, and again, you know, we'll talk about Hit Me Like a Brick a little bit later, but it's a very direct, simple kind of a love song lyric. It's really cool. And this is one of my favorite choruses on the record. You know, something about that last, like, come what may, like that. I love that come down part.
That's nice voice.
Thank you. I've got awesome. Barely anything left for
my vibrato on there and everything.
I got lucky. Ooh. What can I say?
I think he's trying to take my job here, guys.
No, I just want to sing backing vocals on the next one. I'm auditioning. So, but you know, and it's, you know, it's a very simple song, but some of the songwriting choices, you know, it's the parts kind of repeat, but the musicianship in them it separates them, which I thought was really cool. And I really liked the chord progression under the solo. I thought that was badass. So this is a cool little song, I think. So, Brian, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's a lot of these songs, and Paul probably comment on this later, they really, there's just an openness and a place for James to kind of just sing on that I don't think is on the previous solo albums. They were kind of heavier, and there wasn't these big open chords behind them, as much as I love them. Like, there's just something different on this. And this is a
lot of breezy.
Yeah, breezy kind of a summer song. And I love the harmonies on this tune.
Yeah, I thought the chorus, like the vocals and the chorus on this song, turned out amazing. Like, it really sounds really good. Amazing.
Well, you know what? You know what's interesting about this is that this is what I sent to Paul, was the chorus. I said, hey, Paul, here you go. I got this chorus in my head, and I was like, you know, let's just run away, and ba 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 ba, and like Paul has said in interviews, da 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 da, like, right. And anyways, but Paul would take that, and he's like, oh yeah, man, okay, so leave that with me, and then he comes back with these ideas. I'm like, holy shit. And, you know, whether it was like verse, pre-chorus, and he's already got the chorus down, and then I would just start singing the verse. I got the verse, you know, melody. I got the pre-chord. And that's the way it was with Paul and Error. He would, you know, send me, which we'll get into the other songs, but he would send me these chord progressions, and I'm like, oh my God, that's gorgeous. And start writing a melody, and then come back to Paul, and he goes, okay, I see where that's going, and boom, boom. So the whole creation behind this, like Paul was saying, it felt very seamless and very effortless. And it was because of this, you know, this natural kind of unfolding, you know, everybody was involved. When I say everybody, the three of us, you know, through the formation of the songs, it was just very, just seamless and flowing, you know, moving forward, which is what you're hoping will happen when you're putting together songs, right?
Yeah. It sounds like what you're saying, James, is there was a lot of give and take, which leads us to song number three.
Are you serious?
That's what you call a professional.
Brian, I don't know if I can keep up with you.
Awesome transition.
Oh, God, Brian, jeez.
Actually, Brian, just before we move, because I think it's key to point out that that's the first time I've ever written drum and melody. You know, James, I think I told you in the interview when I spoke that James literally sang down the iPhone. And some of the early reviews that I saw were saying about how the vocals really worked great with the melody choices, the songs, etc. And it's because when James sent me that kind of melody and lyric, etc., I thought, I need to keep it in that key. It has to stay in that key because that's naturally came out of him. Right. He's probably found his I don't know the terminology, James, that you're in, but Yep. So I essentially wrote the whole song around that. And I'm glad you pointed out about the space for verses. That's very deliberate. That's a thing that I write in my style. That when it comes to the verse, I almost write it in two parts. The beginning of the verse leaves you space. Take give and take, for example. The verse comes down after the intro and it allows James to breathe. And then it starts to build as the song goes. So That's just a natural style that I seem to always kind of adopt.
Yeah, going on to Give and Take, as you just mentioned, I do feel like there are a lot of these kind of songs that sort of build. And as we get further into the album, there's just some epic examples of where a song starts and where it ends. And you're just like, I love that kind of thing. It's something Dream Theater does all the time that I love. But Give and Take, I love Chance. You're doing this. It's like a stuttering shuffle thing behind the flamenco guitar. And it's just so cool and musical. And it's kind of not something you'd expect to hear there. And then I think, James, I think I've got you going two octaves past middle C when we get to that end of that second verse, which is probably nothing for you considering how high your range is. But it sounds amazing. And then Chance gets into a more really cool drum thing after that as well. And it's just like, I don't know, there's a really neat sort of shuffly, syncopated, but still awesome groove with this. And it just flies with that flamenco guitar. Talk about that a little bit.
For me, like the drumming on this album, that was probably one of my favorite songs for drums because it's just so fun. But when I first heard that song, I didn't know what to do with it. And Paul was like, reference like Queensryche, and he gave me a few different references to look at. Yeah. And then I listened and I'm like, okay, I see what you want here. And then I sent something back and he liked it.
Yeah. And that whole vibe with the bass, I'm going to give you a bass lick here instead, acoustic bass lick. Behind there, you have the da, 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 you have a. So that's the bass behind it. And Chance and I really locked in the kick drums, that whole shuffle of the snare, and it allowed the chords over it to just ring out and breathe. And I think it just translated well. So that's why I was letting Chance here. Listen to how Queensryche do it with those lovely open chords. They're all minor sounding, quite dark. And James kind of took that vibe with a kind of darker lyrical angle as well. So, yeah, it just came together.
Yeah, it's like a shuffle kind of in the beginning. And then it goes almost into like this march thing, which is like the Queensryche type of a thing as well.
Yeah. I think it's 3-4, isn't it, Chance, that one? It's in 3-4.
I think
and
so.
It's not like Dream Theater in 18, 14 and a half.
What's interesting is what you guys are talking about, like any of the lyrics, and Paul was like, I've never heard, like, usually, because what happens with Paul would send me a part and immediately I fall into writing a melody, right? For any of these songs, although Paul wrote Wildflower from start to finish, that was his baby. But whenever I'd hear his parts, I automatically, the melody hits me. And I'd write the melody. And what the way that I've always written my lyrics is I need to have the melody. So that's what I do. I always write the melody first, and then I write the lyric because the phrasing and the syllables are based off the melody. So that's what inspires me. And it was kind of funny. And correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but you were kind of like,
thanks, Ray.
I'd just be sending Paul these, a lot of the melodies were just da da da. Da 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 da, right? Yep. Whatever it was, and Paul would be like, "Okay, man." So, because I guess in the past, what you've written with is that you somebody has a lyrical idea. You were saying, right? And then you move on, and then the melody is like kind of formed around the lyric.
Yeah. In fact, James, I just remembered you actually even sung the guitar part to that. So I was getting these, hey, I've got this idea for a lick. And those chords we actually came from James as well. So I was then having to translate them into something I could play on the guitar and belt it. And somebody just referenced Della Brown totally. That was the kind of vibe we were going for. I'm a huge Queensryche fan. Dream Theater's number one, Queensryche number two.
Wow. It's funny, too. The day we dropped Give and Take, I was seeing Queensryche open for Judas Priest, and I thought that was sort of funny.
Oh, that's right. That's who you were.
Before we move on to Sunset Ruin, I did, Brian, my notes on this song are pretty much exactly what yours were, but one thing that I have in here...
The difference is, John, you get to speak first.
I can mute Brian at any time, so... I think this is the first song, especially if you're listening in headphones, where Christian's piano work really kind of shines, and you don't notice it at first, but when you listen to it, there is some beautiful key work. I mean, it really adds an incredible layer to it.
Actually, a good story about that. So Christian was doing all of these synth pads, etc. And I said to him, you know, we need some very light touches on high keys. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I pulled out Kip Winger's solo album. And there's a song on it called Endless Circles. And the piano player is a guy called Noble Keim, I think he is. And I said, listen to track 3 on that. And he came back and he said, totally got it, and just gave me it back. And he still referenced that to me to say that was one of the best suggestions I've ever heard, because as soon as I heard that, I thought, oh my God, I know exactly what Paul's talking about. So, you know, Chance and I did it with Queensryche, Christian and I did it with few parts. Even with Marco, we were referencing a couple of other sounds from other bands. You know, Dave Gilmour and Pink Floyd go for that approach on the solo for Sunset Ruin, Supernova Girl. And that's the way that we all worked with each other. If you weren't kind of thinking in that ballpark, someone would give you a reference that you could listen to.
Very cool. So moving on to the next track, we do have Sunset Ruin. James, obviously, you've, you know, said in many interviews this was written about your brother passing away. I really like this song. This is another one of my favorites on the record. It's very plaintive. I think, you know, Christian's choice to use the strings was absolutely perfect for it. I think it just fits the vibe of what's going on. Again, another example of the song building as it goes. You know, the second chorus is more layered than the first, which is awesome. And one thing that I kind of like is, you know, you're kind of in more of a breathy kind of a delivery on this one, James, but the bridge is more immediate and powerful. It's more upfront. And I thought that was really cool. So Brian, what are your thoughts on Sunset Ruin?
Well, full disclosure on this one, I did not know the backstory, and I'm going to try not to lose it here, but I lost my dad back in February, and when I heard this song, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, it just,
brick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super haunting, and those strings, you know, anytime you put strings like that just a little bit behind the beat and they're swelling in that sort of way, I don't know, this song, it just really spoke to me in the relationship of, you know, losing someone. And again, this is before I knew what you wrote it about, which is so painfully obvious now. It's just about losing, you know, someone you care about. And especially, you know, like without going into detail, it was not natural causes. So it was a rough time. And this song, I don't know, this song just speaks to me. And now every time I hear the song, I'm going to think of my dad. And that's a good thing, man.
It is a good thing. You know what? We have to feel all emotions, right? We have to feel sadness to appreciate happy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you know, for your loss, too.
Yeah, same here, man. You know, here's the thing is that when we went in to record that out, that song in particular, I said to Chance, I go, this is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough for me. He said, Dad, just take your time and sing it from the heart, you know? And I said, well, that's definitely going to be, that road is going to be wide open. And so I think, you know, what's important, Brian, is that we've all felt lost. We've all felt, you know, when we didn't expect it, like you didn't expect it with your father. If I'm reading you correctly, it was unnatural.
Yes.
With my brother, he was taken far too soon because of pancreatic cancer. You know, and I think, you know, if anything, we can just be more appreciative and without preaching here of each and every day that we have with our loved ones and with people that we just love to be around, and just appreciate that we have what we have, period. Keep it simple, and it's the most powerful thing in the world, you know?
So Megan Barron says, Sunset Ruin is a beautiful song. Any emotional song James sings brings tears to my eyes. Can't imagine how hard the song was for James to sing. So,
thank you, Megan.
So, I mean, talk a little bit about that, James, because it's, you know, it's one thing to write a lyric like this, but you know, singing it literally comes straight from the heart. So writing it down is one thing, but then having to go actually perform it is a whole nother animal. So talk a little bit about, you know, how difficult this may or may not have been for you, and you know, the experience of, you know, getting this out.
Yeah, like a, you know, I said to Chance is that, you know, this is going to be the most difficult because it's just so close to me. And And it just says so many things, and it conjures up so many memories of my brother and I when we were growing up, and my brother and I when we were adults, and his family. You know, I couldn't help think about his wife, a high school sweetheart. And that's what really was the catalyst for this. I was thinking about my brother Bruce and his wife Nancy, thinking that, okay, we're gonna grow old together, and we're gonna have many sunsets to appreciate and be doing the things that we love to do together. And then I said, wait a minute. And that was, you know, wait a minute, sunset. And then that kind of, and then I thought sunset ruin. In fact, Paul, you can correct me, but Paul came back and he says, I love the title so much. Do you want to name the album that? Do you remember that?
Right, yeah.
And I was kind of like, well, can you just give me a bit more time? With the but no, it's something. And I mean, Chance was very privy to all that, you know, when we were coming in, and I got to tell you, you know, even like Paul coming back and going, wow, man, that lyric really hit me. Because once I explained to Paul, it was initially, right, Paul, I didn't say anything. I just said, hey, man. And then when I said to Paul what the lyric was about, Paul was like, holy shit. Okay. I get this. And go in there and knock it out of the park, man. I know you will. And same with Chance. He was just like, Dad, I'm right here. Just do what you got to do. You know, if you want to walk out, you want to take breaks, you got to do it. But we didn't, did we? Right?
Not really.
It
was just an emotional.
Stayed in the game.
Emotional session.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it definitely shows in the performance.
On every level. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to move on to Hit Me Like a Brick. And I wish we had radio that we had 20, 25 years ago, because this would be a massive rock radio hit. I mean, this is the biggest chorus that I think I've ever heard on a LaBrie solo album. I don't know if you agree, John, but I mean, this is just a huge anthemic chorus that just begs to be blasted on the radio as a single. And I don't know what, you know, if this would ever be a single or a video, if it already has been, but it should be. I know radio is not what it is, but I love this song.
Yeah, I this is the one I said, you know, this is the second of the very direct lyrics, you know, hit me like a brick, knock me on my ass. It's just right in your face. Like, there's, you don't have to wonder what's going on there. You know, it's cool like that. I really love how the second verse is different from the first. That was really cool. And right when you think the second chorus is supposed to come in, and Paul, I love some of the choices you've made on this record. You know, right when you think the second chorus is coming in, like, nope, here comes the solo. So your ear is expecting one thing, but then you get something else. And I really, really love that about this song. And something about that last line, James, like, tell me how should one react? Something about that is such a cool lyric. So that grabbed me right when the song ended. I was like, oh, that's badass. Yeah. So I agree with you, Brian. This one is one you crank. And it's like you could hear it like blasting out of the car speakers in the summer as you're driving down the road, you know? So, yeah, tell us a little bit about Hit Me Like a Brick, guys.
Paul?
I have one regret about this record, and it's the fact that we didn't use that opening riff more in that song. I love the opening riff. It's so cool, and I wish I'd brought it back in at the end. But I also love the way that you just mentioned it, John, the way that chorus finishes with James. There's a little bit of reverb there, and that's really cool. But yeah, that was there's almost
off.
Yep.
I think we lost everyone there for a bit. You're gonna have to.
Did we cut out, or
we
did
just
you
went completely out?
You guys
I just froze up for a quick second. No big deal. We got you back.
Oh, so it was us.
It was us then. We you guys were gone for like 15 seconds.
You were about to say your one regret about this album, and I never got to hear it.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, I was saying that the one regret about this album is we never used that opening riff again in the song. It's such a cool riff, and it's got a good groove to it, and I wish I'd brought it back in the song. But the second verse, John, has a kind of Whitesnake vibe. They're one of my favorite bands as well, and it kind of goes a little bit early Whitesnake in there, and does, as you say, go into the solo as opposed to the chorus. So it's a cool song. The opening riff, in fact, we changed at the 11th hour. I said to Chance and James, just literally as I was going in to record it, I said, I'm just not feeling this opening riff. It was totally different. And I said, hang with me, guys. I'm going to send you a brand new riff on this, and I think I did it in half an hour, and that was it. Came up with it, and it really kind of it just made the song perfect for me as well. But yeah, I think this was just a straightforward rocker, a classic rocker that I St. James the kind of template for. Came up with a great. In fact, did you know this might even be? I think you sung the chorus to this one first as well.
Yeah,
like Sunset. Yeah, you did.
I sent you the melody and the a lot of the words
Right. So I then had to write the song backwards from the chorus. Okay, I've got the chorus. What's the rest of it going to sound like? So
I totally forgot about that alternate intro we had before until you said that. But for me with this song, I love the intro bit and also the second verse and pre-chorus section. That's a really fun drum section for me.
Exactly. No, I because everything like it was building. Yeah. Building. But that was the lowest I think I've ever sung a tune.
I was going to ask about that.
First verse. Very first verse. Mm-hmm. And because I think you said, Paul, to me, you said, I want you to think something a little dark here. Am I correct? Was it this song where you were talking about just go a little shade darker? Am I getting something
mixed
up? I seem to recall that that conversation, and I remember just thinking, well, you know, I got to bring it, and maybe approach this melodically like I never have before, and just kind of create. It was all like creating mystique, you know what I mean? And then you get into a groove, which was the second part of the verse, you know. Anyways, it's all part of the building block thing, right?
One of my I've talked to James a lot about this. Some of my favorite reviews are the bad ones. I love the bad reviews. They make me laugh. And I'm kind of strange here. My favorite ever Eden's Curse review was a 0 out of 100, to the point I actually framed it and put it in my bathroom wall.
Oh my god.
So one of the reviews said that unfortunately, Hit Me Like a Brick is like Devil and Drag 2, which is a little bit lazy. And I said, apart from the fact it's in a different key, a different tempo, a different drum signature, the guy's kind of got a point.
Yeah. For me though, I feel like this album is sort of like two different sides to it. You got the softer ballads and then the more upbeat ones, and Hit Me Like a Brick and Devil and Drag are definitely in that other realm together. But yeah, they're not it's not Devil and Drag Part 2 by any means.
That was very deliberate. When we did the sequencing, that we kicked both sides off with those. Mm. Essentially, those are the big rockers of the album. In fact, it's meticulously done. So Supernova Girl is an open E tuning. Second track on side two is Wildflower, which is an open E tuning. They're both Zeppelin-esque, so we couldn't put them together. Give and Take is a slow epic. The next track on side two is What I Missed. It's a slow epic. And then the two ballads, Sunset Ruin, Am I Right, and Devil and Drag, Ramble On.
Our buddy Cam McLeish from Australia says, if you're going to call it Devil and Drag 2, doesn't that just make it awesome by default?
Nice one, Cal.
Yeah.
Nice one. We'll get you to do our interviews from now on, Cal.
There you go, Cal. You got a job now. So moving on to Wildflower. I know, Paul, this is, you know, you told us that this is the one you wrote all the way through. James, you mentioned that earlier in the interview. One of the things that you guys have talked about throughout the interview cycle for the record is that this is very much influenced by Led Zeppelin 3. And I think Wildflower is definitely a strong example of that. You know, and Paul, one thing that you told us when we interviewed you, you said that, you know, people have listened to this song and they get to the end, they're like, what the hell? Like, it's dark. And when I listened to the lyrics, I had the same thing. I was driving in the car when I was really listening, like, Paul, Jesus, what the hell are you doing? But I kind of love that. This song to me is one of the biggest songs melodically on the record. There's just, you know, it so much going on in terms of melody in all of the parts. And I absolutely, again, I love the change at the end. You know, I love how you guys did that on this record where you're expecting one thing to happen and then it doesn't. And you don't even go back to it. It's not like, okay, we're going to throw this curveball. Okay, back to your regularly scheduled programming. It's no, this is just a change and you're there. Mm-hmm. So Brian, what do you think about Wildflower?
Yeah, I love this song. It starts out, it's kind of this little folksy thing, and I actually hear an accordion in there. I'm pretty sure that's what that sounds like. And vocally, it just goes, you know, it's growing and growing. And then by the end, I'm starting to feel a little bit of Dream Theater in there. You know, we get that big, giant, majestic ending, and I don't know, I'm paraphrasing, but some of the Petrucci interviews about, you know, he visions himself on a Pegasus atop a mountain playing guitar. And I'm almost waiting for one of those JP riffs to come in there, because this thing crescendos into this huge climax. But that's what the mark of great songwriting in my book, in this genre, is: when you can start somewhere and end somewhere else, and you're like, how in the God's name did they go from here to here? And it's perfectly cohesive and it just sounds great.
Oh, amazing. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Yeah. What can I say? Deliberate kind of shift towards the end. Brian, you've got it spot on. I think my mind, when James and I connected to begin with, we made a deliberate plan to kind of focus on Zep 1-3. I listened to all kind of, you know, one of my favorite bands again. So just having those records in the car as we were writing together was keeping the songs, the style, the approach of what Zeppelin were doing back in the day, albeit there's no way that we can get close to those gods, but trying to think about how we could approach songwriting. And I came up with Wildflower. So this wasn't an old song. This was something I wrote when James and I had connected completely from the scratch. We were working on maybe 5-6 ideas at the time, James. So I said, look, I've got a lyric. Do you want to finish it? He read it, the beginning of it, and said, look, this is great. Just carry on completing it, and if I need to make any changes, I will. And I'm a huge fan. My wife and I love watching crime dramas, movies where you always have the plot twist, and I thought, I wonder if we could do a plot twist musically as well. Could this go from the happy kind of Beatles meets Zeppelin meets Donovan? And Brian, I think the I'm trying to think of the name of the keyboard, maybe you can remember, James. It's the, what was the keyboard that the Beatles used? There was a keyboard sound. It's not a harpsichord, but there was a Christian. That's the sound that's there. It's not an accordion, but that was very deliberate. It was a melody that I'd written and said, look, we want to get this. It'll come to me in a minute. And then having that complete shift change in those, the lyrics are about this girl. You don't quite know what she's doing. She's airy fairy. She's floating through life. And it completely takes a left turn where you're wondering, wow, what the hell happened there? I can't wait for the next episode. And that's the way I wanted to leave it. And I said to James, when we get to the end, it's going to go really dark and you should close mic it and get more aggressive. And Christian, again, his keyboard work on the end is phenomenal. It builds and builds and builds, and really cool. So, yeah, thank you so much.
So, Chance, what sort of percussive elements did you add to this one? Because it's obviously not just, you know, the drum track. There's some other stuff going on there. So what did you put into this?
Throughout the whole album, there was some tracks of cajones, shakers, tambourines, rim shots, like a ton of different bongos even. But in this song,
a writing pad.
Yeah. My notepad that I use for like drum notes and stuff like that. When we were doing the Ramble On, I know we're not talking about that song yet, but when we were doing Ramble On, we were listening to that percussive thing that he does the whole way through, and I'm like, how am I going to mimic that sound? I didn't know at the time what he used to do it. So then I started hitting my notepad on a chair, and I'm like, I just grabbed the mic and recorded that. But yeah, we wanted like a really bassy, I don't remember what song or what part, we wanted like a really, you know, like a not like a bass drop, but some sort of hit, right, within the song. I remember like I think we layered it with like a cajon, like for the bass. I recorded me shutting that door over there. Like with the mic, I just grabbed the mic and walked over, and it had like this really bassy sound to it when I got really close to it. So I got really creative with like percussive stuff. But yeah, in this song, I think there's like on the off beats and like the second verse and stuff, there's a shaker going on, and throughout the chorus, there's shakers and tambourines and stuff like that.
And James, one thing, you know, that I wanted to bring up, and about this particular song that I thought was really cool is that, you know, this is your record. You know, this is a James LaBrie record. But Paul brings you a song and you're like, you know what? That's a Paul Logue song. We're going to put it on there. Like, I thought that was really cool. And it's kind of a selfless thing because not many people would do that. They'd be like, okay, well, you've got your own stuff you can do. Let's just do my songs. But you didn't do that with Paul. You were like, you know what? I like this song. Let's put it on here. You know, talk a little bit about that because that's a cool choice.
But I've always, and I mean, Paul and Chance, I hope you can attest to this, but like, I've always been open-minded. Like, if somebody brings me an idea and I'm floored, I think that it should be given the light of day. You know, and when I was writing with Matt Guillory, you know, a lot of the stuff that we wrote on all those solo albums, it was a collaboration. We collaborated and we arrived at those ideas, but there would be parts where Matt would come in and go, you know, I wrote this the other night. I'm not sure. You know, what do you think about it? I'm like, what? That's freaking brilliant. Let's just go with it. You know, keep going, man. And it was the same thing with Paul. I just said, that's amazing. That's a beautiful song. Keep going, you know, and I think that would really kind of show that you need to mature as a musician if you can't be open to other people's ideas. And that is like a sign, as far as I'm concerned, that's an insecurity and it's a hindrance because mm-hmm. you're cutting yourself off short to have such a lovely song as Wildflower or whatever song would come in. You know, it just makes sense. Be receptive because it's just going to do you a big favor.
Everything's like a group effort too, right? Like Paul's, you know, chiming in on drums and I'm chiming in on guitars and you're chiming in on everything. We're chiming in on Christian's parts. So right. why would the vocals and lyrics be any different for another member to chime in on or write completely?
Right.
Sure.
Well, that takes us into Conscience Calling. I love this awesome little a cappella thing. It sounds to me like this originally going to be like the intro for What I Missed and you decided to break it up, or it just seems so natural to go into that right after. But such a cool thing. And was this, whose idea was it for that whole a cappella thing, James? Was that you or?
Yeah. So what I've told everyone, it's so funny because John Petrucci, I listened to that. He says, hey, man, I absolutely love that. And I said, I was in our garage with my wife, and we were purging. Let's get rid of this shit. Let's get rid of this shit. Come on. What do you need? You haven't even touched that in 4 years. Okay. And all of a sudden, I say to my wife, I go, oh, my God, I'll see you later. I walked out of the garage, and I went around to the side of the house, and I'm like, da, 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 da. And I'll tell you how that started. I was saying to my wife, because I grabbed this like sharp thing, and no, I'm not a nut or insane, but there was this like this spiky thing that we had used for some like land yard work, and I went, ooh, like I was going to attack her like in a horror movie. And then that spiked this, it sparked this idea. Da, 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 da. So I sang that whole thing. I just kept this melody going and then somewhat repetitive. And then I threw it at Paul. I says, hey, man, I got this like eerie kind of melody. And he's like, holy shit. Okay, man, that sounds really cool. And then eventually we arrived in conversation. I said, I want it to be huge, a lot of vocals. I said, similar to a track that I did with this guy, Henning Pauly, on this album that I did with him called Frameshift. And I don't know if you guys have heard that, but it was an album I did back in 2003, I think, with him. I don't know. And Paul said, well, there you go. Why don't you just hit up Henning Pauly to do the vocal orchestration to get all those parts and harmonies? And Chance, how many tracks did we do? I think it was 70?
60 or 70.
Yeah. So, and then that, so Paul was like, kind of like, well, why don't you get Henning? And I said, yeah, okay, we'll get Henning. And he's amazing at vocal orchestration. And I knew that firsthand because he had been doing that all over Frameshift. And Henning came back and he said, well, here, okay, so I used your melody and this is what I came back with. And I'm like, wow, that's freaking awesome. And then I recorded it. And then I think Paul, at that point, and you can take it from here, but you were saying this needs to be separate. Something.
Yeah, yeah. It was going to be the intro, as you said, John, for What I Missed, And I said to James, look, this deserves to be on its own. And, you know, if we can get the label or the guys mixing the album to split it, give it its own title, and then, you know, it seamlessly flows in. I think we've got one of those kind of backwards pianos of, you know, like a piano note, like I call it the Eye of the Tiger intro. And it comes into the song. And in actual fact, that made us, because that actually started on guitar. So that whole piano lick was... And I said, by the way, this would be really cool to break the album up if we get Christian to play that whole intro on piano. And again, that was just another really cool move to kind of take it away from being so central to the acoustic guitar and make the songs have their own unique quality. And I think that was a really good move for us.
Oh, yeah.
And I shifted all my guitars back by about 2.5 bars so that they weren't starting. To be honest, I'm thinking about when we go to play live, because I can walk off the stage and buy a pint, and by the time I come back, I can then start the song.
I might get a chance to sing that part, and then I'll walk off stage and have a pint with you.
Yeah, there we go. Nice. But again, actually, we're not into the next song, so I'll leave my chat for the next one.
The piano intro on that is awesome. Piano intro. And I'm a piano player allegedly by trade. So James, if you want to do a whole album where it's you and a piano, I'm on board to listen to it. I'll be the first guy in line to buy it. But yeah, the piano on that's amazing. You know, the string orchestration, like strings just add so much, especially to a voice like James and the approach that he takes on this type of an album. Like I just think those strings are just so key, and they just seem to always fit perfect behind those acoustic. I think you're playing 12 and six string on this album, Paul, but yep. Man, there's just something about the mix of those. And then you get a pure piano sound in there and just a beautiful song. And it's two separate songs, but it still feels like one song. So it's like, but it doesn't take away anything from that intro on it. And that intro is just awesome.
Yeah. I kind of got like a little bit of a Jordan Rudess-esque kind of feel off of that. And, you know, as it gets into the instrumentation, one of the things that I thought was really cool about this song is that on this one, the bass kind of leads the riff. It, you know, the guitar is doing one thing, but the bass kind of drives it. And that's kind of what I was hearing was actually what the bass was doing to, you know, push the song forward, which is really cool. And, you know, again, to me, this is another perfect example of the interesting and subtle songwriting choices, Paul, you know, that you guys put in here. Again, I love how the chorus goes to a melody that your ear is not expecting. Mm-hmm. And you guys brought up Queensryche earlier. In the bridge, I got a very Queensryche Promised Land type of vibe off of that.
100%, yeah. This is definitely the second of those Queensryche-esque songs. It's got that breakdown. We have like a sub bass. Don't you remember that, James? James calls me. He says, dude, I've just been driving around the local area listening to the demo and this sub bass hitting in the middle section. He says my car windows were shaking. He said that's phenomenal. What a great idea. And this was just me programming it before we'd even got Christian into the album at that point. So yeah, it was I think this is one of my favorite choruses on the record. I think it was very close to, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but it was between Give and Take and this for one of the singles, and I would have been absolutely delighted with either of them. But ultimately, we went with Give and Take, but the chorus on this song is just so addictive, you know?
Yeah. Actually, our product manager at the label, Freddie, he was like, that song's my favorite song on the album. I'd love to – we got to do something with that. And I said, well, we can always do something with that, you know? Yeah. You know, but I mean, to thanks, guys, for that interpretation on this song, because I think you guys totally nailed it and you absorbed exactly what we were trying to convey. And Brian, going back, wait, what you started out saying, you know, you'd love to hear an album with piano and vocals. The thing that I want to make very clear to everyone out there is we are very much committed, this ensemble right here being myself, Chance, Paul, Christian, and Marco. This is the first chapter of many to come, because we have absolutely loved what we've been doing together and what we've been creating. And we need to explore this fully, and we need to, it would be an absolute shame to just stop right here. So just to let you know, the ideas are already flowing
and it's we're going on to chapter two. Absolutely.
Can I just say fuck yes? Yeah. Oh my god.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I like that.
Real quick before we get to Am I Right and ramble on, you mentioned Marco, and I, you know, I've said it on our show many times. I am a monstrous Marco Sfoley fan. So talk about his, you know, his additions to this record, you know, not just on this song, but you know, in general, because, you know, on another interview, James, you said that, you know, the mark of a great guitar player is being able to, you know, solo and be tasty on an acoustic, because that's very difficult. And Paul, you would know this as well as a guitar player. And I mean, Marco's solos on this record are just absolutely killer. So talk about what he added to this process.
Well, that is exactly what I said. I said, you know, when you're playing acoustic guitar, it's basically you're standing in front of a crowd of people naked. You know, there's no hiding behind effects or anything like that. And it is what separates the men from the boys, as far as I'm concerned. And it was kind of funny because Paul and I initially, you know, Paul had suggested some guitar players who were brilliant in their own right. You know, and at one point, I believe that I said to you, Paul, or was it you said to me, I don't know, we've had so many damn conversations. What about Marco? You know, and and it was just like, what the hell are we doing? You know, and it just at that point, you know, Paul said, can you get in touch with him? I said, yeah, I'll email him right now. I touched base with Marco, and he was on board immediately. He says, oh my God, I would love to do that, because I think too, for Marco, it was something also, you see, every musician wants to grow. Every musician wants to evolve. And for Marco, it was like, wait a minute, you know, maybe to do a little acoustic solo here or there is something, but to do an entire album where they're wanting that kind of approach, I need to be very, very creative. And I need to be, you know, it's something that's multi-layered, you know, it's multi-dimensional. Can't just do one song, walk away. What am I going to do for the next one? And the next one, and the next one. And it was amazing, because Paul became that communicator with Marco. Like I just said, hey, Paul, seeing that you're writing the guitar parts here, man, come on. I said, you and Marco need to be intertwined. And Paul, you can take it from here. But I mean, that's what started, you know.
Exactly. And it was my first time working with him as well. Obviously, being very familiar with his work, I knew the quality of the player that we were getting. But he was so super chilled as a dude to deal with. Very quick. I would give him an email, and I would literally have the solo that day. If we needed any changes in sound, it would be recut within minutes. The guy was so easy to work with, but his playing was, you know, incredible, very, very tasteful. I mean, I can obviously hear the John Petrucci influences in there, but he's another fan, another guitar player I really admire is Andy Timmins. And Andy Timmins has melody through everything he does, a little bit of jazz here and there in his playing. And Marco was just, he was a joy to work with, you know, and in fact, you know, if we do get a chance to play these songs live, I think it's going to be awesome, just as a musician and a huge rock fan, to turn around and watch this guy play, because he is that good of a player. He's, you know, his solos are that good, it stops traffic.
Yeah. And again, similar to, you know, me hearing of Paul, because my dad collaborated with him when I was a kid. It was the same with Marco. You flew Marco in from Italy to work on Elements of Persuasion. So I hung out with him then, and he came over for dinners. Yeah. And I just remember him as a little kid, and I've known him all these years online and still working with you. But yeah, being in a band with him is an honor.
Yeah. Mm. Awesome. Well, that brings us to Am I Right? Brian, for me, this song is all hooks. I mean, in the riffs, the vocals, everything. It's this one just has hooks everywhere you look. And the really cool thing about this, again, going back to the songwriting, the bridge, you know, it actually gets simpler. You know, it's almost deconstructed, whereas the other ones, you know, it, as the song builds, this one actually does the opposite in the bridge. That's what I'm hearing. And you know, the final chorus being super layered kind of plays against that to me. So I really love that about this song. And we would be remiss if we did not mention the return of Miss Teresa Thompson, because what Dream Theater fan doesn't want to hear more Teresa Thompson? So what are your thoughts on this one, Brian?
Yeah, this is a giant acoustic anthem. I think this is like, I'm going to put this up there. This is like a Silent Man, Solitary Shell. Like this just begs to have the crowd singing along with you. And I don't know if James feels the same on that, but man, here we go again with the piano. It's got a few of the, like, I love what I call them, those cascading little arpeggiated piano riffs. When you sprinkle those around acoustic guitars and strings, and you've got, like John said, just big fat hook. I mean, this is literally a sing-along anthem that I think everyone, you know, well, it used to be the lighters, right? Now it's the cell phones. I think those are going to be up on this one. And I would love to see that live, you know.
Yeah, Ray Susie says, most beautiful track on the album, I feel like. I hear that, Ray. Like I said, this is hooks for days, and it's like peanut butter on the roof of your mouth, this one. It's everywhere you turn, there's just something beautiful to the ear. So tell us a little bit about this one, guys.
I can't even remember the song.
I don't know this one. Let's move on to Ramble On.
I think honestly this is definitely my favorite song.
Get the peanut butter off the palate of my mouth here.
Nice. I think this is definitely my favorite song in the album. I mean, I'm in love with every song on the record. You know, I've got a shorter career than James in music. You know, I'm semi-professional in that regards, but there are certain moments in your career that you have some kind of thing from above, whatever it is, just taking over you, and it's pouring out through your fingers. And this was one of those moments. I don't know how the hell I wrote this song. Interesting to say, John, the bridge gets simpler. I can tell you the bridge gets harder. I can tell you it gets harder, because that bridge for me, I could hear as I was beginning to orchestrate the picking. It's super difficult to play. I'll show you that in a second. And I knew in my head where I wanted this bridge to go. But, you know, I'm naturally a bass player. So for me, that means I have five sausages for fingers instead. So the fingers are doing this. And I'm trying to come up with some of these voicings that I hear in my head. And that took probably several weeks to pull that together, to be able to perform it right up to the chorus. The chorus is one of the most simple things, but I think it's really gorgeous. From a musical perspective, before I've even given this to James, I went through to my wife and said, you have to hear this that I've just written. And she said, I've heard it 1,000 times for the last 4 weeks. Because I would literally be sitting in here trying to play this and write it. But it's such a delicate song. You know, coming up with that is what I was trying to do in the bridge. You know, that was so hard to come up with something unique like that, and I can't not do the chord. There you go. So I mean, when I gave it to James and his chat earlier around the melody, I think I've said this in an interview, he gave me the chorus back, and it was a kind of breathy type verse on it. And of course, not singing words, but he gave me this chord demo back, which was ba da ba da ba da ba. So I'm literally walking around the house making a coffee, singing that ba da ba da ba da ba. I was super, super excited, because for me, having created a beautiful piece of music like that, my head was exploding with the potential of where we could go. And I think I wrote to James, said, oh my God, that melody is Take Away My Pain. It's straight off of Falling Into Infinity. It's that kind of era. And I think when we launched that track, second comment on YouTube, all it said was Take Away My Pain. And I thought, yes.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
It's funny that, because when
like that's the first thing that I was throwing at Paul was the melody for the chorus. And then when I heard your that beautiful chordal progression for the verse, you know, you barely notice what I feel. That actually came out of me the very first pass that I heard. And those words came out of me. And I went, wait a minute, this sets up where I want to go lyrically. And just to be real clear on the lyrics. So I'd read a thing. It was a little caption or whatever. And it said, a sociopath is made, a psychopath is born.
Oh.
And that song actually lyrically is about a sociopath. If you read the lyrics, it's about somebody who's emotionally scarred and doesn't know how to feel things, doesn't know how to interpret things, doesn't know how to express themselves. And then hence you get to the chorus. Am I right? Am I wrong? Think about it. And then you go into stuff. We're all a reflection and we're all a product of everything that we've been exposed to since we were a baby. You know, we internalize that subconsciously. And as we grow to be adults, it basically has formed who and what you have standing in front of you. Yes. So even though, you know, I go and I start with the person, I end up talking about politics too, once again, and how they affect each and every one of us, because we are affected each and every day by what our governments shove down our throats, right? And, you know, you could say, well, you were talking about that mainly in give and take. Yes, I was, but this had a purpose in itself to further push that point, which is we are a product of everything that we've been inundated with throughout life. Just letting you know that. Nice and really upbeat and freaking makes you feel good, you know?
Put this one next to Wildflower, huh?
So I basically suggested that 1,000 sociopaths start singing along to this. Did that totally invalidate my point then, James, or no?
I'm pretty sure that I've met 1,000 sociopaths in my life. Unknowingly, I've probably passed them on the street.
Right.
I'm pretty sure we all have.
I did love the reference to Take Away My Pain, though, because we did an episode where it was our favorite James vocal moments, and I believe we had Take Away My Pain as number one. Wow. For me. So yeah. That was anything that has any reference remotely to that song is I'm on board with.
Well, and for me, Falling Into Infinity is my favorite record, so anytime I hear something that sounds like that, I'm like, yes.
So yeah, in fact, I think you guys have just given me a great idea, James. We'll give them exclusive that if we do this live, we can mix up the last chorus and take away my pain. Leave the voice inside.
Let the cold inside. Well, we take over at that point vocally.
Yeah. No, let's not do that.
So real quick, and then we'll get to ramble on, since we're talking about Take Away My Pain. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but if you look up, there is an absolutely beautiful acoustic cover of that song online by a couple foreign guys. And it is, if you guys haven't seen it, it's non sequitur, but check it out. It is a beautiful version of that song, of Take Away My Pain.
Oh.
It's these two foreign guys, and it is fantastic. I rewatch it all the time. So great version of that.
Okay.
All right, so moving on to the final song of the record, not including Devil and Drag Electric, of course. We have a cover of Ramble On. James, I'm going to get your back on something here. Paul, why did you talk James out of doing That's the Way?
Because that's the one. Really,
Paul's not a nice guy. He's not a nice guy.
There's the blabbermouth headline. Paul Logue says his Led Zeppelin song is not very good.
I'm a huge Zep fan, but it's never a song that really connected with me. I know that James grew up singing it a lot, but I remember reading or hearing an interview where he was picking his top five songs. And as we were shooting the breeze on this, I remembered that Ramble On was on that list, and I thought, wow. I more thought about the ensemble that we had, you know, how Christian was doing all of these classic Hammonds. And I think when I was listening to That's the Way, great song, I do love it, and I am only jesting, Blabbermouth, but I could hear us transferring what we were doing on the rest of the record much easier. You know, I could immediately think of Christian replacing the Jimmy Page type heavy guitars with the Hammond. And we ended up getting Marco doing some kind of cool electric stuff on it. But once I said to James, he was like, oh my God, what? It was like the Marco Sfoley moment. Why didn't I think of this the first time?
I remember when Paul came to us and said, that's the way, is terrible. this band isn't even that good. I don't even want to cover that. But so we ended up going.
That is a blogger mouth headline.
There we go.
Yeah. All press is good press, right, guys?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What were your thoughts, Chance, on going? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, James.
Oh, go ahead, Brian. No.
Oh, I just wondered, Chance, what were your thoughts on? Oh, now I get to tackle some John Bonham drum parts on this. Yeah. How did you approach something along those lines?
Well, I listened to a lot of him before going into this record, anyways, because it was one of the references they wanted me to listen to. And I was really happy to do Ramble On too, because I feel like that's just a classic, one of their classics. And it's a lot of fun.
James, for you, I sing on weekends and stuff, so I, you know, have a little bit of a vocal background, and I know that certain singers are very difficult to reproduce. Uh-huh. And Robert Plant is definitely one of them, and you do a great job on this. So talk a little bit about tackling such an iconic vocalist, especially on one of his most iconic songs.
Well, I think you just said it, John. You have to respect the artist first and foremost. And you don't screw with genius, you know? I mean, like the song, and I remember Paul even saying to us, okay, you know, we're just going to stay true to the track. We're not going to bastardize the track. We're going to do it in the way that it was done originally. And so when I was singing this track and Chance once again recording me, the main thing you want to take from anything, whether you're playing the guitar part of that song, the drums, the bass, John Paul Jones, you know, give me a break. You have to really dive deep into what they were trying to convey, because it's all the little subtleties and all the little nuances that they did. And Plant was like that every freaking song he sang, you know, even like when I wanted to, that's the way it ought to be. Like all that shit that he's doing, if I went, that's the way it ought to be. Like, what the hell happened? You know, we just brought in an operatic singer. Like, it's all that feel. It's all that feel that you're doing. And so I think that's what you do. You just respect the artist, and you try and do it the best you can.
Yeah.
But I don't know who you are. You're never going to do it as good as the
original. Yeah, don't fix what's not broken, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, Paul, I would ask the same question to you. I mean, Jimmy Page is legendary for his songwriting, and I mean, he layered everything. So talk about recreating, you know, the musical parts of the song.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite daunting, just like Chance having to learn, you know, John Bonham's parts. By the way, I want to just say hello to Steve Wood, my buddy. We were at Download a couple of weeks together ago. There he is. Hey, Steve.
Up, Steve.
The blue beard. Yeah, we basically, you know, having to tackle those legendary, all of us had to go through that situation. Learning the parts was difficult, because actually, if you watch any of Zeppelin's live performances, you know, Jimmy Page rarely played the same thing twice. You know, if you look at what he's playing live, he's such a fluid player. I think he loved to have that kind of, you know, openness about his playing, but we're all very familiar with the record. So that was, just for me, was learning the parts and trying to do them justice. I remember sending my guitar track on a meter to Chance, and he said, dude, really great groove. I can't wait to record this. And of course, the bass line, and it's just gorgeous.
Oh my God.
It's all over the place. I really loved playing that too. And one thing, James and Chance, if you guys remember, When we signed with Inside Out and this track was going forward for submission, the whole licensing has changed around covers now, that the publisher of the band in question have to approve the song. So they have to send it to, I think, Warner Chappell it was. And what one of the things that they insist on is that you don't mess with that version. So it was are you guys, have you changed it? Have you done a complete rewrite? We were like, no. And once we said that, it was green lighted in a couple of days, which we were like, thank God, because we had no idea. We'd completed the recording and the mixing of it.
You got the green light, not the gas light lighting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, a great song, great groove. I think we did a really great version of it. And kudos, Chance deserves a lot of credit because he took the original version, mapped out what his dad was going to sing, and he even did a mix for Linus, who mixed he mapped all of the vocals that Robert Plant was doing up in the left, on the right, and he gave Linus like a, you know, a total map of everything that he was to do. So, you know, that was really, it was to that level of intensity that we wanted to kind of do our version of it.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that wraps up the record. I know James, you and Chance have some stuff to do. So if you guys could hang out for a second after we go off the air real quick. But, you know, to close this up, man, I got to tell you, you know, I think we were talking earlier. You know, I was telling Paul when he jumped on, you know, we talked to Paul and he just gushed about this record when we talked to him. And he was so proud of it. And it really excited us to listen to it. So when, you know, when the record came out, you know, we had it a little bit early to talk to Paul or a little bit earlier to kind of review it and stuff for the show. But we were like, yeah, this is great, man. This is good. But as we listened, you know, Brian and I talked on the way to the interview here, it really grows on you. And there's always something extra that you hear there. And it's a beautiful sounding record. And I think this stands apart in your catalog, James, because I mean, to me, your stuff is really known for the choruses and the hooks and everything, but this takes it to a whole nother level. And I think this fits your voice in such a way that is like nothing that you have ever done. And Paul and Chance, like your guys' contributions to this, the songs are interesting to the ear. I mean, they're melodic. This is a fantastic piece of work, guys. I mean, this is really a great record. So thank you for coming on and talking about it with us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for the kind words. John.
Yeah,
no problem.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This has been a dream come true ever since we started this journey as two guys that just want to talk Dream Theater, and to think that James and Chance and Paul and everyone would come on, and we had Jordan on before, and it's growing. And I also just want to say a huge shout out. You guys, all three of you see all these comments coming on. This show would not be what it is without all of these people watching and giving the comments, feedback, and downloading. And they are truly what makes it, and they are huge Dream Theater and James the Brie fans. And Chance LeBrie and Paul Logue fans as well. So we appreciate all those guys and you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, to everybody checking out the show, this has been Talking Into Infinity. Don't forget to click that like and subscribe button so that you're notified every time that we go live. We will be back on the air on Thursday, June 30th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook, YouTube, talkingintoinfinity.com, and the CMSnetwork.com. So, for my co-host, Brian. Thank you again, Paul Logue, Chance LeBrie, and James LeBrie. Guys,
thanks, carpe. Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate you.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Carpe diem.